Chapter 10. Cycrax Cluster. Unknown. First Captain Zerbrin came round to the squeal of plasma tools and the smell of sparks. The emergency lighting was low and sporadic, the shadows long. Wired multi-laser cradles hung from their rails, limp and unpowered, and flecked with white specks of flame-retardant spray. The rough shape of Markarian's head passed between Zerbrin and Dantalion's ceiling. The light nicked the shipmaster's steel frame.
"We made it,"
Zerbrin croaked. His throat was bruised. Talking felt like trying to swallow a rank pin. He grunted and rolled his head, his eye at floor level, and looked along the deck plates to one of the command turrets. Sparks sputtered from torn electrics. A team of serfs, in full body protective gear and rebreather kit, attacked a fallen bulkhead with a plasma torch. Charged filaments of waste plasma crackled and sprayed. The stuttering light silhouetted a robed figure casting cleansing oils around the cut site, reciting a psalm for the day's forgiveness and fast healing. A giant amongst those lesser mortals in his unmarked battleplate, veteran Sergeant Columba was bent into the heart of the plasma spray, pulling away chunks of debris in his gauntleted hands and hurling them over the edge to clang in the cogitation pit below.
"Vox," Zerbrin recognized, "the last thing I remember. I was at operations. Your crew allowed the dorsal void bank to overload.
An inevitable consequence of going into battle with a numerical, strategic, and technological disadvantage, Lord Captain,"
slurred Markarian, stumping clumsily into his field of view.
"An emitter overload when we translated out threw you down the walkway and struck your head on the rail. You've been out for just over an hour."
He shrugged apologetically, or tried to.
"I'm not sure exactly how long. The Kronos are out."
With a groan, Zerbrin made to pull in his elbows and draw himself up. Nothing moved. In consternation, more than concern, he jerked on his arms, then his legs, but neither moved a millimetre. He could feel them, a pins and needles tingle across his various points of contact with the ground, but he couldn't command a single muscle to twitch. It was as though the servomuscular connections to his armour had been severed. Without power assistance and nervous control, half a ton of bonded ceramite was little more than an ornate, null sensoria tank, the kind used to prepare neophytes for the experience of mucronoid hibernation. Indignity piled upon indignity.
I cannot move.
Markarian gestured across his body with an open palm. Zerbrin rolled his head the other way and met the leering half-skull of Mendel Rayok. The Space Marine's armour was bone white and bore the modified double helix of the Apothecarium on the shoulder pad. All well within the diktats laid down in the Codex Astartes, and Zerbrin therefore felt obliged to approve, but, as with the Chaplaincy Black, it seemed inimical to the exemplar spirit. An alternative variable was that Zerbrin simply did not like Rayok. And he did dislike his second company brother with a self-sustaining passion. Binoptics glowered dully from the eye pits of the organic upper half of the apothecary's face, the lower part constructed by the ugly fusion of an iron grill to the Son of Dawn's once noble cheekbones. The reconstructive work was so extensive, so obtrusive, that given the apothecary's long service and skill, its unsightliness could only have been intentional, as if Rayok had deliberately cut back his face to bare cold metal and a darkness he no longer wanted to conceal.
"You will heal. Your paralysis is induced and temporary."
His voice was a grizzle of Vox corruption. His optics glimmered with every intonation.
"I have noted an alarming tendency among our chapter brothers to not lie still when commanded to do so."
Zerbrin held Rayok's unblinking, backlit stare.
"Flush it out of me. Now."
Rayok sighed.
"I blame Oriax Dantalion. He persuaded the Primarch progenitor to adopt the Codex Astartes, and now every exemplar believes himself a martyr to his own special wisdom. Except for you, of course, brother. I am an apothecary, said Raok.
The diamantine drill bit of his Narthesium gauntlet revved and reversed. A spring-loaded injector attachment clicked out of the reductor, cycled through various combinations of syringes and needles, until a hyperfine carbon tip slotted into a slender glass vial, locked, then extended forwards. The plunger drew back into the apparatus, slowly filling the syringe with a milky fluid as the apothecary leaned in.
I always know best.
Zerberin clenched his jaw and tilted his head to expose the vulnerable fiber bundles and cabling hidden beneath the gorget ring. He felt a sharp pain as the hypodermic squeezed between the vertebrae at the top of his spine, and then a rush of cold. He gave an involuntary gasp, then shuddered as the sensation passed down his spinal cord and dispersed into his peripheral nervous system. He wriggled his fingers, and this time they moved, gauntlet servos whirring as armored digits rolled clumsily in and out, up and down. On impulse, he shifted his hand to fumble over his weapons belt. His fingers closed around the grip of his bolt pistol and squeezed. Fingers, wrist, shoulders. The sensation of being bundled up in a skin-tight carapace of thick wool began to recede. An Umbra pattern bolt pistol's uncompromising menace left no place in its proximity for that kind of uncertainty. He sat up slowly. A tangle of twisted and torn walkways crisscrossed the command deck, smoke and dust rising from the cogitation pits with each slow, grinding whoop of fans. The strategium display was static, the encircling image boosters and visual feeds hissing noise. The main viewer crackled with electromagnetic distortions, flickering with auger traces and warp energy residuals that stained the eye with afterghosts. Everywhere, the frail bodies of crew serfs lay under blood-lashed metal. Anger, real anger, deep in his transhuman belly, filled him with excoriating fire. A chapter-strength deployment, the might of the Fist's exemplar fleet, had been brushed aside. Ship to ship, man to man, the Adeptus Astartes would always triumph, but the weapons and technologies that the beast could call on were just too powerful. Dantalion transported the bulk of the First Company, a few squads of the Second, Seventh, and Tenth. What had happened to the rest of the fleet? Bulwark, Faceless Warrior, Alcazar remembered. Could the Fist's exemplar have been reduced to little more than the First Company and a handful of squads from three others? There had been no other option. Any other commander of the Fist's exemplar would have taken the same decision as him.
How did this happen? We were not as worthy as we considered ourselves to be, answered Ryok,
clenching the reductor back into his Narthesium as he turned and walked away. Markarian stepped back to allow Zerberin to stand up, the Space Marine's genetic gifts just about compensating for the dizziness and slight lack of motor control that lingered in his system courtesy of Mendel Raok. The bruising round his neck restricted his range of motion, but breathing at least came easier now that he was upright.
What is our status? The orcs took out the system, the whole damned system. We were lucky, if you'd call it luck. We were already heading out, and were able to make an emergency translation before we suffered too much heavy damage.
A ruptured power conduit running through the ceiling sprayed the walkway with sparks and made the shipmaster flinch.
The rest we suffered during...
He shouted as the hiss of sparks died down.
I saw the interdictor make it out ahead of us. I also saw Grey Ranger crushed like she was nothing.
He was silent for a moment.
My first ship.
Did any other ships manage to escape?
No sign yet, but it's only been 10 minutes or so since we emerged. Systems are still coming back online, and we're still assessing the damage. And...
He gestured to the wreck of the Vox turret.
Suggestions?
The Fist's exemplar hierarchy was no different to that of any other Codex-compliant chapter, but the lines were enforced with a stringency seldom seen elsewhere. They were notoriously free and independent thinkers in their founder's mould, not the barbaric affectation of the wolves of Fenris, nor the solitary temperament of the hunters of Mundus Planus, but a mentality born of absolute conviction. their personal infallibility. It was, when properly managed, their greatest strength.
"The Codex would suggest we resume our original heading," said Makarian. "If anyone made it out of Vandis, then they could be anywhere in the subsector. Rejoining the last wall at Fahl would be their most logical destination."
"I doubt the ship would survive such a journey," Zerberin grunted as he stood.
"Walk with me to Vox."
There was not a lot to see. Zerberin picked up a headset from a console. Foam covered it. The loop of wire by which it was plugged into the terminal pulled taut as he drew it to his face, a child's toy in his massive gauntlet.
"Where is the woman that was stationed here?"
Makarian nodded to the work crew. Their plasma torch was making rasping, shallow cuts into the bulkhead that had sliced the section in half, and Makarian's Vox liaison too, by the looks of it. The hiss and whine of spent plasma were strangely reminiscent of the white noise leaching from the transceiver set, as if there was some cosmic confluence of which Zerberin, for all his gifts, could never be anything but unaware.
"A shame," he said,
and meant it. She had been competent. Makarian towed aside the twisted aluminium frame of a console chair, taking the ivory sliders and brass dials and deftly recalibrating the board. Zerberin pushed the left headset earpiece up against his corresponding ear and listened. White noise whispered from the set. Static. Which was a misnomer in many ways. It implied a steady state, something unchanging. But the sound, crying through Dantalion's receiver arrays, was anything but steady. It crested and fell, hissed and crackled, and precipitously dropped or rose in pitch. It was cosmic background noise, stellar radiation, energy bleed from unshielded power sources, which on the command deck just then must have numbered anywhere in the high thousands. It was almost like voices, whispers at the very edge of straining.
"Stop!"
A horrible sensation chased down Zerbrin's spine, similar to the feeling of the counteractant that the apothecary had injected into him, but 100-fold worse for having no discernible material source. As if a soul could feel rotten. As if static had the taste of copper and smoke. He tightened his grip on the physical surety of the headset and turned to Makarian.
"Dial it back."
The shipmaster did so. The noise dropped away to be replaced by a sound in his head like knives on the wind. It was a voice.
"Dantalion? Dantalion, respond!"
"The system is fried,"
Makarian was saying, a vox wraith in his other ear.
"It's the receiver. It can't distinguish signal from noise."
"Do not touch the controls,"
Zerberin snapped. He felt sick. Not physically, of course, his gifts prevented that, but he felt spiritually spoiled. He twisted around the headset's microphone bulb and spoke into it.
"Is that you, epistolary? Is this Gilliman?"
A sound like laughter prickled the static.
"My name is Calcator, warsmith of the 4th Legion in command of the cruiser Palimedes."
Zerberin froze. He wanted nothing more than to tear the headset from his face, but it was as though the absolute cold of the void had soaked into Dantalion's antennae, run through her wires, and iced the muffler to Zerberin's ear.
"I do not speak with traitors," he hissed.
"Then just listen. You're in danger here. Your jump has not taken you far from the ruins of Vandis. Your vessels, Paragon and Intrepid, are in the Chorus system. Paladin of Rubikai is in Randale, and Vindicator in Quaelor. Gilliman and Excelsior are in the Uren system, none more than an hour from an Orc fleet. And trust me, Dantalion, they are coming. Trust you?"
Makarian was looking up at him, uncomprehending. Some horror in his eyes made the bruised skin at the back of Zerberin's neck creep. He spoke again into the pickup.
"How do you know the coordinates of our ships? How are you reaching us? Favors given, favors owed. Do you really want those kinds of answers, Exemplar?"
"What of the rest of the fleet?" he said, after an uncomfortably extended pause. "What of Alcazar Remembered? What of the Interdictor?"
You are the last to emerge, and I'd almost given up on the possibility of any more of your ships making it from the warp intact. My ship made it to the Mandeville Point and was primed for translation when Vandis was destroyed. The Empyrean buffered her systems against the Star Death's throes. An escape paid for in the blood of my brothers. No depth of space could obscure from me the warmth you show your allies, Iron Warrior. The voice dropped into the seethe of static. Zerberin could hear the crackle of emotion. There was a time when Magnaric and I were thought closer than brothers. Our bond was stronger than I expect you to understand, forged by the glories of an age you cannot conceive. I found his faith contemptible, his obsession with me pitiable. Magnaric would be even less fulsome in his remembrance of me were our fates reversed, but I will remember him as a brother. Do you think your Imperium the sole proprietor of a finite store of grief? We are not so different, you and I. How so? Did pragmatism not lead you to abandon your own chapter master? We did not see the Alcazari member destroyed. I did not see the Emperor slay Horus, but I know that it was so. Zerberin snarled. Do not ever forget it. For one who chooses not to speak, you are as lyrical as any sign of Sanguinius. I asked you to listen. Now listen. There is a system less than 3 hours from you. Prax. It was a garrison world of the Iron Warriors at the height of the Great Crusade, and if there is a single world within 10 light-years that the Orcs advance into Segmentum Solar has not already destroyed, then it will be that upon which sit Perturabo's walls. If we can muster our assets over Prax, then we might all have a chance of going our separate ways. This time, Zerberin managed to pull the headset off. His chest felt tight, but hollow, as if his armor plate was wrapped like a mummy's bindings around an overinflated skin. He smothered the headset pickup in his gauntlet and turned to Markarian. The cruiser, Paladin of Rubike, transported the 5th and 9th, while the mighty Gilliman held the bulk of the 2nd, as well as elements of the 3rd, 4th, 10th, and most of what Dantalion didn't carry of the 1st. 350 brothers. Add the firepower of the Aegis frigates, Paragon, Intrepid, and Vindicator, and the support frigate Excelsior, and it was clear that one rundown traitor cruiser presented little by way of a tangible, material threat. And of the other kind, that less physical peril. He licked dry lips, mentally crunching variables he had never before now had cause to quantify or weigh relative to others. He attacked his scheme of action from every angle, however improbable, assessing with force the firmness of every assumption on which it was founded, until what remained was a bastion of solid calculation and impregnable logic. He was an exemplar. Infallible. He returned the headset to his ear and uncovered the pickup. Send me the coordinates.